This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Om Saram to our listeners. I'm Gulab Bilmoria of Sri Sathasai International Organisation of New Zealand, and I offer my most loving and humble pranams at the Lord's feet of our beloved Bhagwan, Sri Sathasai Baba. I welcome our listeners to this 1136th Saturday News Program. This afternoon, we will hear final part 4, a satsang series hosted by Region 5 of USA, where they aim to bring speakers from around the globe to provide their insight on specific themes. On the 22nd of March 2025, Spectacular Insight had a special guest on that day, and she was Sruthi Vijayakumar of New Zealand. She's also the member of International Young Adults Committee, who says some key insights about pushing boundaries. So before we hear final part 4 of this satsang, let's have a Ganesh Bhajan, and here's one for you.
Vigneshwara, Lord Ganapati, victory to thee.
Vinayaka, Vigneshwara, Lord Ganapati, victory to thee.
Vinayaka, Vigneshwara, Lord Ganapati, victory to thee. Auspiciousness is thee.
Vinayaka Vigneshwara, Ganapati Lord, auspiciousness is thee.
Vinayaka Vigneshwara, Lord Ganapati, victory to thee.
Vinayaka Vigneshwara, Lord Ganapati,
maybe as common as, you know, singing bhajans of different languages. Yes, let's keep our Sanskrit bhajans. They have such a vibrational power. Sanskrit is such a unique language. I don't think we should stop singing Sanskrit bhajans because we're in New Zealand. Actually, there's a real potency in the language, but let's also sing Māori. Let's also sing English. So we are more inclusive, you know, to our context and our place. So I don't think we should drop the things that might be hard, but we need to understand why we are doing them and then maybe find ways to explain them or draw a bridge. Because if someone's got a fear that this is too Indian or too Hindu, how do I explain the Vedas aren't Hindu? Chanting Vedas is not a Hindu thing. Swami has actually said these are sacred sounds that the saints heard in their meditation far before Hinduism was even a thing. Yes, the Hindu religion has taken it and taken it forward, but Vedas predate Hinduism. They're just sound vibrations, you know, very profound sound vibrations. Country should be able to chant and benefit from. He's gifted Veda Poshna, Vedas to humanity, but it's a common thing in many countries of Vedas. So how do we help ourselves understand first and then communicate from that truth that if people feel like I'm not trying to push my Indian culture on you, actually Swami's just given us this amazing precious tool of bhajan or vedam, and I want to share that if you're interested. And I can share, you know, and we get kind of schooled up. I think we can share these things in a way that I feel sad when we dilute Swami's teachings or we leave parts of it because we're like, no, we're scared. People will like not come to the Sai Center. I think that fear shouldn't hold us back from taking Swami's message forward. But we might need to get informed as to why Swami has said this and be able to explain with love and with clarity and truth why this is, you know, like what the concerns and why this is not a Hindu thing or an Indian thing. It happened to have come on the Bharatiya land, yes, but this is something that has scope for everyone to benefit from if they wish to. And does that help, Rashmita?
Yeah, it does. I think we're acknowledging the root of where Swami's coming from, and then in the case we have any discrepancies, we can adapt to that situation as needed.
Without dilating the actual root, exactly. Yeah. Being really grounded in Swami. You know, when you're so grounded in the truth, it gives you that confidence, right? Like when I understand Vedas are not Indian, not Hindu, but they're just these powerful sound vibrations, it's easy for me to share. But if I'm not sure, you know, if I'm not grounded in that clarity, then an elder's like, but what about this? And I can be swayed. So I think, I mean, going to Swami's teachings, I think spending time with Swami's teachings and really being sincere, okay, I've got this fear, so I've got this concern. Let me not push it aside. I'm really wondering, like, what have you said? You know, like, what have you said about this? And like, really study and get that, pray. It might come in your intuition. It might come through an experience. It might come through his text directly. I think that clarity through his teachings can really give us the confidence to push boundaries with love and in an appropriate way. Yeah.
Yeah, so with the interest of time, I'm going ahead with the other question. So we have a tradition in this podcast series, where previous guests will leave a question for the next guest. And honestly, we don't know who is that going to be. And that's a fun part. And so the questions are our previous guest, who is Brother Krishnamurthy Venkatraman, he had asked a couple of questions. So questions are how can we equip our Balvikas gurus and young adults for acquisition of new students to our Balvikas and retention of existing students till completion of Balvikas?
Okay, interesting question. So how can we retain and get new students in Balvikas?
Yes.
I have a story that comes to mind, and I have to apologize at the outset that I haven't prepared the story for the satsang, so there's a chance I might miss some of the details, but I'll get to the essence, and I'll try find the story afterwards, and I'll send it to you, Rashmita and Deepak. So in case I quote something wrong, we can get the proper version to the young adults or anyone who's here.
Yeah.
About Balvikas. So let me try and recall the details of the story. It was to do with Sister Geeta Mohan Ram, who many of you may know, was a Balvikas guru for many years. And there was a time in her class where, in the time she was teaching Balvikas, and this is where, I'll try to remember the details as best as I can. So she was teaching Balvikas, and the class started to grow. You know, parents started to hear about how awesome the class was, and the class started to grow and grow, and new students were coming. And as I remember the story, her ego was getting a bit proud, okay, I'm doing a great job teaching Balvikas, and these students are coming, and you know, she's feeling like very proud of her efforts. And then what happened over some time was the students started just suddenly dropping or diminishing significantly. And the students were going and she was feeling so heartbroken. And she was like, man, why aren't new students coming? Like, we need more students. And like, she had this, you know, again, I don't want to misquote what she intended, but as I remember the story, you know, she had this yearning to see the Bal Vikas movement grow and was feeling very disappointed that the students were now leaving. And you know, I think at one point she might have been left with one student or two students. And she was in Darshan and she was like crying about this and really like feeling so bad. And Swami came to her and spoke to her and they had an interaction. And the essence of it was her realizing it was her ego. Her ego was there. You know, her ego was, you know, like wanting the movement to grow. And Swami said something to the effect of like, you know, like you just serve me and you just put importance to me and you just show up and you serve and I will bring the students. I will send the students. Like, don't think like the sent. This is me putting my words. So again, I don't want to, sorry, Swami, I don't want to misquote Swami, but this is the essence of what I took from it, you know, and we can try to find Swami's exact words and share them with you. But the essence is I took from it. And I think the same goes to, you know, growing the youth movement or anything. You know, like Swami doesn't need us to grow the organization. It's maybe a bit of a controversial stance. Like he wants us to follow his teachings and follow with purity, you know, and sincerely practice them as best as we can and offer the fruits at his feet, you know, really to offer the fruits at his feet, to really, you know, like if one student comes, 100 students comes, doesn't matter. Swami even says, you know, an ounce of cow's milk is better than a barrel of donkey's milk. Like Swami actually doesn't care if there's one kid or 1,000 from his words, you know, like it's about the quality. And so I guess what our job I feel is as Bal Vikas gurus or youth coordinators or people who want to do more service, whatever our role is, to really have that purity and that quality. And from the incident with Geeta Mohan, she went back and she really took this to heart and she just started serving this one or two students with the most love and the most you know, purity and surrender she could, and the movement grew. And students started hearing somehow, and they started coming, and parents told the parents, and the movement grew. And I mean, you think about the Sai movement, right? We have millions of devotees around the world. Millions. It's mind-boggling, the scale. And that's not because you and I are growing the Sai movement. It's not because we are going out doing public outreach and, like, telling our friends. It's Swami has his ways of, you know, like, and everyone has the most unique story of, wow, I stumbled upon a book. I was helpless in life and someone told me, or somehow I found his picture, or he came in my dream. Like, Swami is the Lord of the universe. He doesn't need us to grow the move. He is here giving us a chance. Maybe actually one other point. I feel quite passionate about this, actually. We are not serving in the organization to grow the movement. I mean, I really feel deeply Swami has given us the organization as an opportunity to love him and to realize who we are. And, you know, like, you think about Swami, he's Lord of the universe, right? In a flick, if he wanted, he could send 1,000 students to the Bal Vikas class. He could implement humanities education in every school in the world. And, you know, he can do anything, you know? He doesn't need a hospital to cure people. You know, he doesn't. We've heard the stories, you know? And so if we really have conviction in this Swami that can do anything and everything and is holding the universe in his hands, he's orchestrating this universe, like he doesn't need any of us. He doesn't need me as a youth coordinator. He's just given me this chance so I can learn him, love him, think of him, and love. And through being a youth coordinator, like, it's not about have we grown the youth movement. Sometimes I feel it's nice if the youth movement grows. I feel good when many people come to a study circle. I feel a bit bad if 3 people show up. Those reactions are natural, of course. You put in your efforts, but at the heart of it, man, like, the amount of self-transformation that's happened inside. Actually, there are no others. I mean, if you really go to the heart of Swami's teachings, there is no one else. There's only you. And he wants us to realize there's only me. There's only Swami in Rashmika and Deepak and me. So who are the people we want to come to Bal Vikas and youth? There is no one. It's actually only me. And he wants me to realize that I am everything, or I am nothing. The ego is nothing and he is everything. And so if we make that our sole goal, and in any way we are serving in any capacity, like, okay, Swami, like, you are everything and I surrender at your feet and I pray that your will be done. And if you want one student, 100 students to come, let your will be done. You know what's best for me. Maybe I need 3 students and they're what's going to serve me. Maybe I need 4 people at this youth study circle, because that's going to create, I might think 10 people is good, But Swami knows the four that come actually will create the perfect environment for deep, intimate discussion. Okay, can I have the faith to accept that whatever Swami gives is for my best? Can I have grow my faith that He is the master of the universe? He can do anything. And if I can pray and surrender to that Swami in any seva that I do, wow, like it's the most thrilling experience, because the self-transformation is, and then we just, I mean, I feel so like, wow, we're so lucky to serve Him, but He doesn't need us. And so it's freeing, it's liberating. There's no burden to grow the Sai movement. There's no pressure. Well, I've been a crap youth coordinator. The youth movement has gone from 10 to 2. It's not your fault. 100 different factors are going on. But have I shown up with sincerity and tried to serve as best as I can and surrendered, trusting He's giving, even if my elders are like, it's hard when the elders are like, where are the youths gone? I mean, I've heard this so many times. We used to have this many youths and now there's this many. And you know, like, what can you do? And yes, like, we'll try and do our best to have relevant programs that help the youth. But if I can feel sincerely, even though they're pressuring me, it's not my fault. It's not on me that the youth aren't here, but I'm just here to serve Swami and to, yeah, and to do my part, you know, in this opportunity He's given, and to be okay with the fact of, I mean, it's hard when the elders are saying that, it can be hard. I've been there, you know, but if I have that conviction, they too will feel that, and it will change. Anyway, I've given an elaborate answer, but I think it's a really important question the guest asked, you know, and it's a really pertinent one to any time we are serving in the organization or doing anything in life for that matter. I mean, the same, we haven't touched on society and work or community, but the same goes, I mean, it's maybe what has given me a lot of confidence to also serve in society and to try and push boundaries. Like, a big part of my work is, you know, what I feel motivated around work is trying to bring human values into business, to rethink how we think our relationship with nature, to help, you know, our capitalist companies really respect nature and respect people and think about business in a non-greedy, non-consumeristic way, which is very different from our norm. But Swami doesn't need me to do this. I'm not here to save the world. I'm not here. Swami's just given me a chance and happens to be this field to think of Him and love Him. And that gives me a lot of freedom and confidence to boldly say things to a business leader, because I know if they respond or they don't respond, it doesn't matter. But my duty is to sincerely be a kind of advocate for Dharma in a respectful way, in a non-judgmental way, in a loving way, but to be that. And when I feel like, yeah, I think from that truth or from that light or from that freedom that Swami doesn't need us and the results don't matter, we can really have a lot of confidence even in our workplaces to really, yeah, speak for His truth and not be so worried about the consequences of, okay, will I lose my job, or if I stand for Dharma, you know, will I miss the promotion if I don't say what they want to hear? Actually, I'm not here for promotion. I'm here for truth. So let me, that I can't, you know, I'll face the consequences. So I will take the consequences and I'll be okay. That's my thoughts, team. Yeah, yeah.
So as I said, like, we have our tradition to like guests asking questions to the consecutive guest. So do you have any questions for the upcoming session guest?
Yeah, I have a question. It was a question I was asked yesterday in a youth satsang, and it really had me contemplating. So the question is to the next guest: if you could have been in an interview with Swami in the physical form now, you know, what would you say to Him? If you could ask Him any question about anything in an interview, what would you ask Swami? What would you say to Him?
Yeah, that's so really interesting question.
Is it just one question that they can ask?
Yeah, okay. If they have two questions or three questions, also fine. Yeah, but what you know, if you get an interview with Swami now and in physical form and ask Him anything, share anything, you know, what might you ask Him? Yeah, yeah.
It's a really interesting question. So everyone get hyped for the next session. We're going to open it up now to Q&A. So anyone is, you guys can put in the chat or unmute and ask Sister Shruti any questions you guys have for her.
Sairam, Sayuma had a question in the chat. She mentioned, Sayuma, do you want to ask your question live?
Sairam, thank you, Rajit. And Sairam, Sister Shruti, that was an amazing, amazing session. So I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. I did have a question for you. So you talked about the job that you moved to India for, and I'd love to hear more about that, and maybe some of the logistical boundaries that you had to, face or push in order to be able to live there, like the traveling to work and the traffic and dealing with, the food and, living and, just the daily challenges, money, all of those things. So yeah, I'd love to hear more about your journey there.
Beautiful question, sister. I mean, I think the experience I had was quite a unique one, actually. Swami's grace. So I worked for this tiny like education startup. There were like four of us. We actually lived and worked in the same apartment in Pune. So I didn't traditionally have a commute. And a lot of our work actually was we would tell stories about different people and capture that in curriculum. So, for example, and try and bring kind of values into it. So, for example, one of our first projects, we went and we met this amazing rice farmer in Mysore. His name is Gani Khan, and he's like very passionate about biodiversity and rice. And he has like hundreds of varieties of rice and 50, 200 varieties of mango. And this like, and he's this farmer, and he's been really struggling with climate change and farmer suicide in his community. So we got to know Gani and his family, and we turned his story into like a maths class for kids, where they had to learn about how much money we'll make and will Gani make if this climate change and he's making getting less crop and how will he pay for his expenses. And so the travel we were doing to your question was actually every time it was to different unique places to get to know the stories of these different people. So once it was to this like farm, he was also Muslim. It was my first time staying in an Islam home, so it was a very interesting experience because I came to his home and they were used to very different foods. I'm vegetarian, they had meat, and they had their, I'm very used to staying in more like Hindu or neutral environments. So it was actually very interesting. We were constantly in very different environments. Once we told a story about, in Bombay, there was a, we kind of, on the trains, if those of you who've been in Bombay on the trains, there's sometimes people playing music on the trains, and they might be playing like the drums and singing, and often they're like, blind or deaf, and they'll be kind of begging for money, going and singing and asking, and they're kind of perceived as beggars. And we did a story on one of these guys. His name was Chetan Bhaiya, and he was blind. And we went to his home, and he actually considered himself a street performer. And he had a blind wife and two kids, twins. Can you imagine a blind couple with two twins? And he was by day, like on the trains of in the trains of Bombay, perceived as a beggar, kind of playing the dholak and singing and asking for money. But by night, he was this very active community man, organizing blood drives and events for the blind community and helping blind people. Just this amazing person. And so actually to your question, Sayoma, the biggest boundaries we faced were my own prejudices, because I have this perception of the beggar. And we got to go to his home and realize this is a beautiful soul. And I had so many ideas of, I don't know where the conditioning is from, of what how he might live and the slum conditions. And actually it was a very civilized home, and it was very inspiring to see his blind wife like cooking and making dinner. And like, and so the biggest boundaries actually in that time in India were my own prejudices that were constantly challenged. And India is amazing because you meet this variety of people from all backgrounds, social statuses. I mean, it's you have some diversity in New Zealand, but the diversity of culture, thought, religion, race, like it's a whole new spectrum in India. Especially, I mean, it was quite different to my family trips, where I'd be around similar people that think the same and do temple visits and shopping visits. And this was such a unique experience. We were in rural schools with teachers from public schools, getting to know kids, like that was from a very different economic background to my own, and going meeting their parents. And so I think maybe the thing I wanted to share to your question, Soma, is, I mean, this trip or this time working in India really showed me the importance of getting out of our comfort zones and being around people unlike us. Because we don't realize the prejudices we have when we are always around the same people. And I mean, a big thing is even our friend groups. If our friends look the same as us, sound the same as us, come from the same backgrounds, we're quite used to kind of a certain way of thinking and getting out of our comfort zone, which is what this work kind of allowed me to do. That was probably the most unique and most valuable part of being in India, which gives you, I mean, the food and stuff for me, actually, it was quite okay. Like India, I think, has the most beautiful food in the world, and we had a huge, it was not easy, and it's really cheap, and we could get help to come and clean at home, so that was really easy. And traveling, I actually love traveling. There's trains and buses, and got to know how to use the trains and buses. There's sleeper buses, buses with a whole bed. I'm like, this is amazing. Overnight, I can go to sleep comfortably and go anywhere. Like, so actually, the travel, the food, the logistics, I found living in India in some ways was actually really fun and really easy. it was probably my own prejudices that were breaking. That was actually the biggest boundary of a challenge in that sense. And I mean, maybe the one hard thing, Sayoma, is like things take a lot of time. Like you could shop at the bank to open a bank account, and you could be there from 8 a.m. and not leave till like 2 p.m. You know, like it's like getting stuff done. There's another way of doing things, and I'm still learning that, you know. But you find, I mean, Swami sends help, and you find someone local who knows the system, and they help you out. And I think, you know, Swami's grace, even a new context, you know, whether you move countries or.
No, I completely understood your point. I think it's just we have to open our eyes and see the different perspectives we have in front of us. That way we can push like our perspective on the world and how we see things. But I want to open the floor again. Any questions that anyone has, you can put them in the chat or you can unmute. Okay, so if we don't have any questions, we're going to wind up this session. First of all, thank you so much to all of you for joining. And of course, to our wonderful guest, Sister Shruti. You shared very beautiful and thought-provoking insights. And I really enjoyed how you brought up examples that both of us could think about in our own lives and implement them into our lives about pushing boundaries. So we really appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know you're in India and you're in like it's 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. in the morning. So I really appreciate you waking up early for this session. Additionally, this session will be uploaded into YouTube and will be shared for the link online shortly after this meeting is ended. And any last words, Shruti?
Just gratitude, team. Like, it's been such a joy to be a part of this. It's given me such a beautiful opportunity to think of Swami and contemplate his teachings and contemplate some of the hard questions you asked. And so really just grateful and, you know, congratulating all the organizers and praying that Swami guides us and inspires us to continue to tune into that amazing source of love in us. And from that place, you know, be this kind of beacons of life, light, and really, you know, expand through any limitations, you know, as we get to ultimately push the greatest boundary of our ego and get to know him. So really, yeah, pray Swami blesses, guides all of us, all of you. And thank you for the beautiful opportunity.
Thank you so much. So we'll conclude this session with a prayer to Swami and then Om Shanti. Dear Swami, thank you so much for letting us have this wonderful guest and all of you as the audience to help us grow and be closer with you in serving you and pushing any boundaries we have in our life and just getting closer with you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Sairam. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. Sairam, everyone, thank you so much.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.